listening to nativetalk.net. Audio files are available online at nativetalk.net. Bouncing 1.21 gigawatts of radio goodness off the newly repaired Hubble Space Telescope. Whoops. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon, listen. Lots. There are people in China with poor reception. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and thank you for joining us today on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. We are not talking about Alaska. All that stuff's already been posted. No more of that because Brandon thinks it's so boring. Come on, man. It wasn't that bad. I stretched it out over a period of time.
I'll agree. The content was great. It was more the way you told it.
What, amazingly interesting?
Nap-worthy. Yeah, I actually took a sample to bring to preschoolers to help put them down at noon.
You did not.
I didn't. But I could if I needed to, and it would totally work.
Such a liar. Email if you want to be a part of the show, podcast@nativetalk.net, or you can leave us a voice message on the message line, 970-278-5791. Now, Brandon, you no longer drink, correct?
That is correct. Since, I want to say 2015, 7-Eleven of 2015.
Okay, but prior to that, you were well known all around the city of Sacramento as the town drunk.
I mean, well known is more of a relative term. I was like a hermit crab drunk.
A hermit crab drunk? What does that mean? Yeah.
So it means that the cashiers at Costco knew who I was, but not many other people saw me.
You didn't spend several nights in the can like Otis on the Andy Griffith Show?
Never woke up in a gutter with fuzz on my tongue. No.
What was your favorite drink when you did drink?
It was a black velvet whiskey, just straight room temperature, just warm.
Okay.
Whiskey.
Who makes black velvet?
Canada. I have no idea.
Canada. Wow. The entire country of Canada makes it.
They come together. It's a bonding experience.
So you would say whiskey was your favorite. What did you like best about it?
It was cheap. It was strong. It got me drunk.
Okay. Did you ever consider making your own?
No. Well, consider as like a faraway dream. Like, oh, that'd be really cool to have my own distillery. But not like never really put it into action, you know?
Ah, okay. So do you think it's okay for people to make it on their own?
I think as far as I understand, it could be a dangerous process. You might want to know what you're doing, but if you know what you're doing and do your research, I don't see any problem with it.
You're thinking of meth, Brandon.
I think alcohol burns. Isn't alcohol flammable?
You're thinking of meth.
No, I'm pretty sure alcohol will catch on fire. I think it can explode. The distillery's
going
to explode.
If you get it too strong or whatever, but I don't think...
Or if you expose it to open flame, you know, which I think is heat is required in the distillation process. I'm pretty sure.
But I think if you have the right equipment, it's not necessarily a dangerous situation. You know what I mean?
Or if you know what you're doing, hence the disclaimer earlier.
Now, how do you feel about Native American tribes on the reservation growing things like marijuana?
Yeah, I think it's easier if the state that the reservation is in also legalizes marijuana.
Yeah, let's say that's the case.
Yeah, if that's the case, I'm on board with it 100%. Yeah.
So if a tribe wanted to, I don't know, open their own distillery, you would say...
If you know what you're doing with the equipment, if you've done your research and you're aware of what can happen and take, you know, precautionary measures to avoid the hazards, I'm all for it. Yeah.
Well, that happens to be exactly the case with the Confederate tribes of the Chehalis Reservation down in southwestern Washington state. That's
I drive through there.
Oh, really? You drive through the Chehalis Indian Reservation?
Well, not the reservation, the city. I don't know if the reservation is in the city or
It's down there. Well, they were interested in selling liquor. So they started selling craft spirits, you know, like small batch stuff, beer at their restaurant in the Lucky Eagle Casino. But when they wanted to start making their own whiskey, the federal government said, no, You can't do it.
Say yes.
Well, if the federal government says no, the answer is no. So
no, it's 1-1 by my count. So you're the tiebreaker, Cliff.
I say yes, but the federal government outweighs me. But the question is, why can't Native Americans anywhere make their own whiskey? They can't. It's forbidden. Yeah.
I mean, all right, look, what about regular American citizens? Can they make whiskey at their house?
Yes, they can.
What?
But you can't do it on the reservation. You can do it if you take your business off reservation, but if you're on your lands, you as an individual or as the tribe, you can't make your own whiskey. You're breaking federal law.
Man, go home and eat an Astro Pop. I'm making whiskey on the land. If everyone else can do it, so can tribes. That's bull honky.
Yeah, well, they can't. And in fact, one of the reasons why tribes like the Chehalis want to do it is because small-scale distilling is an incredibly lucrative and booming business, providing... Amen. And it provides a lot of jobs, a lot of revenues for states and local governments. So why can't you have some of that revenue going to tribal governments? You know, if they know what they're doing, they follow all the regulations, they can't do it. Why do you suppose they did this in the first place?
My mind jumps to the big brother attitude of, oh, those poor little savages, they need help protecting themselves. They will just become fall down drunk and burdens on society if we give them the opportunity to make their own liquor. Let's ban it.
Teach them, pale-faced brother, all about red man.
That is exactly what it was, almost to the letter. This,
wow. Public
This goes all the way back to 1834 when a law was passed prohibiting distillation on Indian lands. The law threatens fines and asset forfeiture to anyone who sold, possessed, or made strong drinks of any kinds on tribal grounds. In drafting the law, Congress appears to have been motivated by concerns over non-Indian settlers dodging federal alcohol taxes. Because this one happens all the time, where let's say you're a brewer, you want to make liquor, but you don't want to pay, you know, federal or state taxes. So you show up at a reservation, say, hey, I'll give you a cut smaller than what I would pay the government. And they say, hey, set up shop. I don't care, as long as they get free liquor. But... they could have just taxed alcohol production on the reservations. They had the ability to do that, but there's more going on, and it goes to exactly what you said. During that era, there was a stereotype of a drunken Indian named Brandon.
Hey, hey now.
Oh,
that's not really his name.
I'm sorry, just a drunken Indian. And federal lawmakers enacted laws designed to protect Native Americans. 1834 statute.
You have to do air quotes whenever you say protect.
Right. They stated their secondary purpose, describing itself as an act to preserve peace on the frontiers. Because, you know, those drunk Indians, they get wild. They're going to go shooting arrows at everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't get to scalp the cowboys because we had too much of that fire water.
The ban was signed by Andrew Jackson and was a piece of...
Of course it was. God, I feel so great about having his face in my wallet.
You're not shocked by that?
Dick. Sorry, you might have to bleep that. I don't know.
According to him, the thinking went that natives were uncivilized, incapable of enlightened self-rule, and bound to be fleeced by white settlers. So the federal government solved the Indian problem by putting them on reservations where they could be protected by the Department of War. And, of course, the soldiers stationed on the reservations, they were exempted from the booze ban, and they got government-supplied daily whiskey rations, which they drank in front of the natives that they were protecting.
And I'm sure that there was no violence caused from the soldiers towards the natives. In fact, they lived happily ever after, and peace was had by all.
Of course they did. So it took all the way until the 1950s for the part of that law to be repealed, permitting the sale and possession of alcoholic beverages on reservations. Can you believe that? It wasn't until 1950 that natives were allowed to even possess liquor on the reservation.
Remind me again what time Jim Crow laws ended.
That was like in the 60s, I believe.
Yeah, I can believe this happened in the 1950s. That sounds about right.
Oh, okay. I think that was a different focus.
Yeah. But it was the same people, you know, and anyone whose skin was darker at all, it was the same people holding them down. So,
you know,
you just asked, can I believe it happened in the 1950s? Yeah, I can believe it.
And believe it or not, this ban exists on the Alaskan reservations, often for the same thing. However, it's enacted by their own tribal governments, saying that, you know, liquor and other illicit substances are illegal on the reservation lands. But at least it's not the federal government doing it. It's, you know, their own people. And, you know, if you want to do that to yourself and have a dry, I mean, they've got dry counties in Texas, for goodness sakes. So that's unheard
that
of.
That stops all drunk driving and public intoxication in those areas, you know.
It does.
In areas where they have state liquor stores that stop selling alcohol by, what is it, 7, 9 o'clock or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No one's drunk at midnight because they you know, they made a law. So that changed everything.
Well, you know, and being the dry area that it is, I definitely did not meet a drunk Alaskan native.
I believe it.
Walking on the street, who actually gave me a very big hug. And
what a friendly guy that didn't exist.
Oh, yeah. He was a very friendly guy who, not existing, visibly and incredibly drunk.
And I'm just so glad that the laws are in place so that, you know, he wasn't there at all. Thank goodness. Thank God they're here to help us.
Good. Thank God.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise we might be in trouble.
So
I just can't understand, because, you know, as a teenager, when your parents held you from doing something bad, that stopped you from doing it, right?
Yeah. No, it didn't.
It didn't make you want to break out and rebel and fight against the rules and do it anyway or anything.
That happens when you have a rule. The first thing you want to do is rebel against it.
I wasn't even thinking about doing it until I learned there was a rule against it. Now I want to go do it.
Exactly. Now, the Chehalis have estimated that their proposed distillery and brewery project would create 100 reservation jobs, which is a reasonable expectation given the recent renaissance of craft distillery around the country. And that's, like, you know, pretty typical of the number of jobs created. So that would be good for those natives there to give them jobs and, you know, bringing money in. But they can't do it. Matter of fact, the craft spirits industry in general created nearly 6,000 jobs last year, new jobs. While the number of distilleries grew by 20%, there are 1,500 craft distilleries nationwide. And momentum shows no sign of stopping.
So, grapes of wrath.
Yeah. Well, this is something that's continuing to grow, but all natives are prohibited from joining in. So, you know, I guess. No.
Bottle of liquor can make a Molotov cocktail, so maybe the government has a point. So I'm feeling kind of anarchist about this.
I don't know. I think that anything that is able to be done that's legal should be legal on the reservations. It's not like they're pushing to open, you know, meth production stations, you know, producing illegal stuff.
The concept that they're doing it to protect ourselves from ourselves is insulting. It is asinine that they would treat Native Americans as subhuman and incapable of reasonable thought. And it's like, it makes me very frustrated.
I felt that way from the beginning, because that's what the Bureau of Indian Affairs exists for, to look at you as a tribal entity and control you and be like the big brother, or, you know, telling you what to do. Yeah, the parental figure, the authority figure, overlooking your tribal council, which overlooks you, you know. So I am very much against it. So irritates me just as much.
Well, and like you were talking about, if it's allowed in the general public, then it should be allowed on a native reservation. There's no difference between the human. Like, if you're gonna, I guess looking at it the other way, if you're gonna try and control the behavior of Native Americans on their land, then you should do it for the general public. You should make laws prohibiting the craft beers and all of those microbreweries and the things that are really popping with that hipster culture. Ban it all flat across the board, and we'll see how far that gets us.
Well, we did have prohibition at some point.
That went really well. Yeah. Lasted about a year and a half. I can't
and
remember.
Have you ever noticed that prohibition happened right after we gave the women the right to vote? Coincidence?
Probably.
And because we gave women the right to vote, followed directly and, you know, with a direct correlation to that, we had prohibition, which gave rise to organized crime, which then gave rise to the hippie movement and the breakdown of society. I think we can trace all of society's problems today straight back to giving women the right to vote.
The toe bone's connected to the stegosaurus.
Do you know what's funny about that? I got to tell this story. Our sister Kayla, she was in high school, and she came to me and asked, she said that they were supposed to give a controversial speech, okay? And she said, everybody's giving the same old stuff, you know, abortion or, you know, I don't know. I can't think of other controversial things, but, you know, gay rights. Yeah, typical stuff. And she goes, I want to do something different. I want to do something that no one else is doing. And I told her a great subject would be advocating for the repeal of women's right to vote. And I invented that whole thing about, like, connecting just in ridiculous ways, giving women the right to vote led to this, that led to that, you know. And I don't believe it at all, but it made me laugh as I was writing that speech. And
I have a feeling that her teacher had a very different reaction.
Well, you had to get it cleared before you went up. And her report was that her teacher laughed and said, well, this will certainly be controversial. And you know what the funniest thing about it was that the person giving the speech was a woman. That made me laugh more than anything. Yeah. Because if a man says it, you're just a chauvinist pig, you know, whether or not you believe it, you know, like me, I'm just saying it to be an idiot, but hearing a woman do it.
Say things like that to make it true.
What? What'd you say?
Moving on.
All right. Anyways, so I don't, for before I start getting the angry letters and the picket signs, I was kidding. All right. I was joking. When you look at me that way, I was joking. All right. I got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more here on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Armed, dangerous, and off our medication. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced. Whoa,
wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No. Or
Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Oh, okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or
In 1924, the United States granted citizenship to all Native Americans born in the U.S.
The right to vote, however, was governed by state law, and some of those states barred Native Americans from voting until 1957.
Today, American Indians, Alaska Natives, and Native Hawaiians are asserting themselves with political candidates, getting involved in understanding issues, and registering to vote.
Be part of the rising political clout of Native voters.
Let your voice be heard. Register to vote.
This is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. We're not sure how our voices get from here to in your ear, but does it really matter? Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio program. Message line, if you want to call in, drop us a line, 970-278-5791, and visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/NativeTalkRadio. Like us there and share our posts with your friends. That'll help us out. You know what I mean? So, speaking of Facebook, would you consider that a good communication tool?
If used appropriately, it can be, yeah.
And how could it be used inappropriately?
The look at me mentality, the whole, I have to get a recording of this thing that's going on in my life rather than participate in it because I have to get it up on Facebook. The comparing yourself with other people's lives and feeling inadequate, basically spending all day on it and using it as your primary form of communication, I feel can do damage and abuse the tool. Yeah.
Okay. What are the other ways that our society uses to communicate?
There's other social media platforms. There's telephones.
Telephone. There's television. There's like one way communication. There's two way communication. Communication's a good thing, though, right?
That you can. I have a trained alligator. You can flush down the toilet, and it knows where to go in the sewers and crawl up into my friend's house. And
you've got carrier turkeys.
Leave a message in the toilet. Yeah. All the common ways.
Okay. What do you know about the way Native tribes in the past, Plains Indians, for example, how did they communicate over distances? Because obviously they could just speak to each other if they were in the same room. But how do you communicate over long distances before the advent of electronic communication or radio frequencies and stuff like that?
Well, the answer that most people would think of right away would be smoke, right?
Yep, smoke signals. Now, smoke signals were a good form of communication, particularly for the Plains Indians, because the plains are flat. They're not mountainous. And you could actually see a smoke signal for many, many miles. And by changing the puffs of smoke from short to long, think Morse code, they could send a very detailed message. Sometimes the message was a warning. Some were simple, like, come on home, it's time for supper. You know, the kids are out playing in the fields. And it was the equivalent of flipping the porch light, you know, but for miles and miles because you could see that far. Now, another interesting thing was the Plains people did not have a written form of language. They could speak, but nothing was written down. So there were no history books or, you know, it makes it interesting. How did they go to school if they didn't have textbooks?
This might shock you, but years ago, there actually weren't buildings that you would go to all day long as a child and learn. You would learn through life.
Teach 'em, Paleface brother, all about red man.
And as a side note, there was no segregation at that time.
but they did write things down, all right? They used pictures and symbols. Just because they didn't have an organized alphabet, they did actually write things down in pictures and symbols. And they did have spoken languages. And when the early European explorers entered the plains area for the first time, they created even sign language. At one time, there were over 3,000 different signs, each one having a meaning, so that they could communicate without speaking at all.
Amazing. So,
now, we mentioned the pictures and stuff. They
with, with, Sorry, would it be called NASL?
Native American Sign Language? That's, yeah, there we go. I like that one. The plains people, they would write on rocks, cave walls, scraps of buffalo hide. That was their form of paper, I suppose. And these pictographs told stories of their battles, their heroes, their daily life. So not a whole lot different. I mean, I was kind of joking when I said, how do they, you know, get textbooks? But in a way, this was their textbook because, you know, you could record what happened in particular battles or hunts, and you can share that with generations that would come after you. They also, again, warnings. There's a story about a Plains family who saw a picture sign there by the side of the creek. The picture clearly told of an enemy camp just ahead, and the family could tell that the writing was recent. There had been little wear to the message, you know, like a weather wear with rain and stuff like that, and the weather had been wet. So they turned, took another route, and avoided the enemy camp. So, you know, things like this. Signs. They're using modern, very like modern ideas of you know, sharing information with people, even without Facebook. It's amazing to me that anybody survived before Facebook.
I didn't even know we were able to communicate without a computer. I mean, that's the only way I know how to talk to you is with a computer. Otherwise, I don't even know how to say words.
Well, until someday. You know, I actually move out there.
Oh, is your tune changing, Cliff? Are you actually thinking about making the journey back home?
I'll make the journey someday.
Really? This is news to me.
I don't know.
This guy has been such a rock. He would rally against the idea of moving out here.
You know what? I am
stunned. And
it's
what is
because of all the rain.
August 19th at 1:56 Pacific time.
It's all the rain, man. It's the rain.
Amazing.
I mean, come on. You've been sending me pictures all summer of rainy, cloudy skies, and it's just depressing.
So, no, like legitimately, I know I stopped sending you the photos. I was sending him pictures
every
day.
Yeah, you stopped sending me because of the rain. I know.
He harks on the rain all the time. And I was sending him photos of the clear, beautiful sky. Or on the cloudy days, I was sending him a photo of the one patch of blue that was visible in the sky.
You jerk.
Really beautiful. But I stopped doing it because it got so boring sending all of these amazing pictures.
Rain pictures. I know.
I've been here for like 6 weeks, 7 weeks, something like that. It has rained 2 days. On one day, it rained for like 5 minutes as a sprinkle. And on another day, it was off and on like 3 or 4 times during the day for a total of like an hour.
I don't believe you.
I wanted it to rain more.
I don't believe you.
It's so cool out here. You should check it out.
Hold on. Can you hold the computer up to the outside? Let's hear what it sounds like out there. Okay.
Maybe one day.
Point made.
I would love for it to be like that. I want the inclement weather.
Oh my goodness. All right.
It's sunshiny and beautiful right now.
That's not what it sounds like to me. So if you can't do smoke signals at night because you can't see them, how do you communicate at night?
You get a stick and set it on fire and then block the fire and then show it again.
Okay, you got it. Fire signals. That's how they did it at night. These were motion signals made by, I like this, running in front of the fire or running around the fire.
Okay, that makes sense.
And Indians, what's that?
Yeah, your body would block the light. So it would, that makes sense.
That's right. Indian scouts could read these messages easily. One of the uses for fire signals was to tell other tribes of danger. It seems to be a recurring theme. It's almost like the plains were like a dangerous place. What the heck?
Should have got for cover.
Running around the fire meant go away, get out of here. And they would also use blankets to communicate to someone who could see them but might not hear them. A wildly waving blanket told of, guess what? Danger.
Robinson.
I need to get that sound effect. It gave the tribe a few precious extra minutes to get ready for an attack. Then, of course, they had mirror signs. The Plains people did not invent the mirror. The white man brought the mirror with him. But Plains people absolutely put mirrors to good use. They traded them. They traded for them with traders. So the traders thought that the Plains people just wanted to see themselves in the mirror. Absolutely not even close. They wanted the mirrors to send signals in the daytime, signals which could be seen for miles, streaks of reflected sunlight, which could be read easily as puffs of smoke. So they took the smoke signal and were able to get it to go even farther. And the nice thing is the mirror was portable. They could send a signal on horseback and be miles away in no time, unlike the smoke signals where you had to, you know, build a fire. Now I mentioned the sign language with over 3,000 different signs. Each band of natives had at least one sign talker, and the talkers understood a lot, and they could sign faster than you could speak. So when Europeans first started entering the plains regions, they communicated with early explorers using sign language. So you could have a translator and communicate information very, very quickly. So, yep, that's information about pictographs, smoke signals, and mirrors. So hopefully that taught you something.
Yeah, man, it really did. That was really cool. I didn't even know that there was so many ways to communicate over such great distances as the Plain Indians would have to face.
They didn't have Facebook, though, so they couldn't be considered advanced.
You can't like it. You can't like a smoke signal.
Yeah, they had to make do with MySpace.
Yeah. Is that little mice that ran messages back and forth?
Yeah, pretty much. It was an ancient way of communication. All the way from back in 2006, man.
Oh, man. I don't know how people even survived past those dark ages.
I have no idea. Thank you, as always, for listening. That will do it for us today. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. As always, share the show with your friends. Send them to our website. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
You're listening to the nativetalk.net radio podcast, now with the look and feel of hand-tooled leather. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.